Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book. I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to and hopefully enjoy. Joining me today is Juliana.
Hello everyone.
And happy new year. It's happy the 11th of January.
It is 2025.
Yeah, we were planning on doing some podcasts a while ago, but hey, Luke had two gigs, one immediately before Christmas, one immediately after Christmas, and I got home and I was like, oh no, I was surrounded by people on the plane who were coughing a lot and my sinuses weren't working on the plane. And then I
was
hit,
the sign.
Yeah, and then I was hit with a week of a really bad cold. You maybe could still hear it in my voice, but oh my goodness, there was everything was put
coughing,
on.
Yeah, a lot
I've
of sneezing.
Hardly left the house for
yes,
a week.
That is true.
I will need to leave the house at some point just for some more fresh air. Yeah, I've been for like two walks. I've been at the house twice. Once I went shopping, wasn't it?
And then, yes.
Definitely need.
We can go out for a walk today later.
Right. So we do actually have our Christmas special. We will record that next episode,
yes,
which is our Lord of the Rings trilogy marathon, which we kind of messed up all of the scheduling because I had these extra work gigs. We're like, hey, let's do it over Christmas. And we did do it, but there's no way to watch all those movies and also record podcasts about them.
No way. In 3 days.
No, it wasn't going to work, but we did get through it. Anyway, here's another thing. I've been rereading quite a few books for the SFBRP must read list.
Yes.
Which is, what was it, like 52 books of styles and what is it? So it's like books where you are going to be, what is it? So which books are the best examples of science fiction available to read today? Which books are best for those wanting a deeper dive into science fiction? And which old books stand the test of time? And here's a crucial one. Which new books will we still be thinking about in decades to come? So
yes,
I was like,
that's
hey,
a difficult one.
Yeah. And so on one of the considerations, you know, when we were going through, we're like, hey, how about these books? Haven't read them for a while. Will they still hold up? So I started checking out Suzanne Collins, The Hunger Games, number one. And I was like, how much of this is a good book? And how much of it is do I just remember the movie? Because yeah, I think I read the book and then watched the movie. Or maybe the other way around. I can't remember. But
I
like,
never read the books. I only watched the movies.
I really enjoyed the book. I gave it like 4 stars. It's very effective. And I was like, oh, really, this is good. And so I was like, let's go back. And I thought I would be like, well, is it a good book or is it just made into a movie or whatever? And it turns out that wasn't the issue. That isn't the reason why it doesn't hold up, or that wasn't the consideration.
Okay, that's interesting.
It turns out that this is a young adult book.
Ah.
And everybody who read that young adult book went on to like write what is now science fiction.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
like
yeah,
the people who grew up reading Tolkien, like when Tolkien was like with Lord of the Rings,
yeah,
suddenly all of those people were writing in the like 1980s.
Yes.
All of the fantasy stories that I was reading in the 80s and 90s are all in the wake of Tolkien.
Yeah.
And then of course fantasy now is in the wake of those kind of things. Yeah,
yeah. So some books are generation informing books,
yeah,
for writers that write books upon those shoulders.
Yes, but and here's the thing. In this book, so what does The Hunger Games do? It is a love triangle, mm-hmm, based around, you know, violence towards children or young people experiencing violence.
Yes.
That is like the premise of the book. And then like so much more fiction since then, like Twilight. So you've got a love triangle, you know,
yeah,
sort of our, you know, pluck a young lead who, you know, is it going to be Peter or is it going to be the other one? Or no, that's actually The Hunger Games. Is it going to be, is it going to be Jacob or is it going to be werewolf guy? Or maybe werewolf guy is
Twilight. I've never seen
Twilight.
I don't know. Is this based on books? I don't
really
know.
Yeah, so the Twilight books and stuff.
Oh, okay.
So, and then also in the other way, you get all like the, all right, then you get the Maze Runners and the all of these other young adult science fiction,
mm-hmm,
which is sort of like, all right, we're in a dystopia thing and there's sort of like it's based around, you know, reality TV game show style kind of things, put the children in the thing again.
Yeah.
I've not read the Maze Runners or Scorch Trials or whatever these other movies are that come out about this,
but it one of the big themes of this are all of them have the theme of they're young people, they're in a really bad situation, and in the end, they have to stick together somehow.
Yeah.
That's like the thing.
Again, and that's totally fine.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, is that I started reading this book again. I was like, oh no, this is now
So you started reading
The Hunger Games.
Yeah. Okay.
So I was reading The Hunger Games and I was like, oh no, it's actually not that good. And it was like really slow. And these days you wouldn't have to do that. You'd just be like, all right, imagine dystopia and also some kind of, I don't know, whatever it's going to be, you know, like thing, you know. And it's the basis now of like, all right, so now, you know, the Squid Game is like Hunger Game, you know, like all of these kind of things where you don't need to do all the long explanations of how a dystopian, you know, whatever it's going to be, the authoritarian government, fascist government, keeps people in line by making people do bad stuff for money or for life or whatever it's going to be. That's now foundational. Mm-hmm. And I started listening to this audiobook again of this. I was like, oh no, this is just taking too long, and it was really boring. And I gave up.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I do remember. Maybe 10 years ago,
when we
talked about this before, about The Hunger Games, I remember you saying, oh, the book is actually, it's actually good and better than the movie. That was your impression in the past. And it's really interesting because, of course, by then, at that point, you were living not too far away from the book when it came out.
Well, I read the book in 2010.
Yes.
So that's like in...
Yeah, it's even longer than 10 years.
December 2010. So yeah, like 20... So 14 years... I read the book 14 years ago. And I was like, let's go back 14 years ago. Does it still hold up? But I can't approach it in that way because it's now been so influential on like movies and culture, but also other science fiction, which let's... So this is not... So The Hunger Games not going on the must-read list.
Okay.
And that's the thing. Like, you don't know how well a book will stand up. Maybe it does stand up great, but I think that when people go back and read like young adult fiction, like this will be one of those quirky things, you know. It's not going to be young adult fiction which stands the test of time, which will still be culturally relevant in, you know, 40 years time. People will be like, oh yeah, there was that time when, you know, we liked, you know, torturing children and making children kill each other. Or whatever it's going to be. And it'll be like, oh yeah, that was very, you know, that was very 2007 or whatever it was. Actually, I don't know when the movie came out. Let's type in Hunger Games movie just to make... Because, I don't know. So yeah, the Hunger Games movie came out in 2012 and I reviewed the book in 2010.
Yeah,
so I'd read the book and then watched the movie. Yeah. And then I was like, great, I don't have to read the next book. I'll just watch the next two movies. Yeah. And I watched the second movie, never got round to the third and fourth movie.
Me neither. The same thing. But also, I was a bit too old for the target audience
then. I'm not the target audience for a book written for teenage girls.
Yeah.
And, you know... Mm. It's totally fine. Anyway, let's move on to the actual topic of this episode, which is the follow-up book to one of the books which is actually on the SFBRP must-reads list. It was called The Space Between Worlds. We reviewed it back in... I should probably look it here. So, February of 2021. So, what's that?
Not too long ago. 4 years ago. Yeah.
And it's, I think, a very good book. I think it will stand the test of time. It's Space Between Worlds by Micaiah Johnson. So I was like, hey, next book came out. Let's check out Those Beyond the Wall. It was published March 12th, 2024. So it came out last year.
Okay.
And I was like, all right, yeah, okay. I gave the previous book 4.5 stars. Why not just carry on with it?
Let's give the second book and maybe a trilogy a go.
I don't think it's going to be a trilogy.
No.
No, because it's set in the same world, but it's kind of a sequel. Either way, it's Space Between Worlds number 2 is what it's called.
Okay.
It doesn't feel like a trilogy. So anyway, I got the audiobook. And this was like, you know, 6 months ago, last summer I got the audiobook.
Oh,
or last spring.
Okay, this long ago, okay.
Well, it was just sort of like, it was just on my wish list.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'll just get it. I've got plenty of Audible credits left to go.
Yeah.
And so I got the book and it was sitting there. And then I started listening and I was like, oh, it's... And I didn't really get into it in the first chapter. I fell asleep or something. Mm. Another book came up, started reading something else, you know.
Yeah.
And then went on to something, you know, and I was like, oh, I'll get back to it. And I started re-listening to the first chapter. Oh, I wasn't quite getting into it. And it just took me a long time to get into the book.
Okay. Did it take you a long time because it was relying so much on knowledge of the first book?
I'll explain it. But then what happened is that another podcast that I started listening to last year, I can't remember why it came up, but one of the SFBRP listeners recommended it or mentioned it, and it's called Wizards versus Lesbians.
Yeah.
And they did an episode about this, and I generally only listen to podcasts which discuss books in detail that way. if I've read the book myself.
Makes
or
sense.
If I know I'm never, ever, ever, ever going to read the book. Mm. And or sometimes, you know, I'll listen to the first part, decide if I'm going to continue listening or not or whatever. And so I never listened to that. But this podcast has been sitting there since like August last year where they've read it and reviewed it. And I was like, oh, I'll get to that episode of that podcast.
Yeah.
So there was always this reminder in my podcast player that, hey, you've got this book. Also, you've got this book on your phone that you want to get to. And I think one of the most difficult parts is that it's like difficult to get into because the book feels like it assumes you've just finished the first book.
Yes.
But I didn't. I read the first book 3 or 4 years previously. So then it's like picking up.
Yeah.
But here's another thing. The first one is a multiverse kind of style thing. Mm-hmm. Multiple worlds, space between worlds.
Yes.
And it starts off and I'm like, okay, so we're not with the main character where she left off in the first book. We're with a different main character. And then I was like, but was this other character? Oh, yeah, it was like maybe a minor character in the first book. Oh, okay, they're talking about this person. I definitely know they're in the first one. But then I was like, which world are we in?
Mm.
And that's not something that you normally need to worry about when you're reading science fiction or any kind of fiction, except these days when there's just multiverses everywhere.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, which version of which character are we with now? Mm-hmm. Are we with this emperor and this Adam or this, you know, I'm just saying some names from the first book. Like who are we with? Like which...
And
which,
when and yeah, which one?
Where? And my next attempt to getting into it, I was like, oh, this must be a few years later than the first book. Anyway, I never got to the... I got 20% of the way into this book before it was finally clarified who I was spending time with, in which universe, and how much later.
Mm.
And that is not good. Or that's not a good way to start the second book.
That makes it hard.
It's not like I want my hand being held, but it's you're doing on hard mode to throw people in at the deep end when there's not just multiple places we could be, multiple times we could be, but also multiple different worlds where in some of these different worlds, some characters survive the first book and others, they don't survive the first book. So then we're in a world I was like, oh, Kara is here. Oh, she's in this one. So this, and Kara's only in of the, you know, 100 or so worlds. She's only in 3 of the worlds that exist, or like, you know, because she died.
She's the main character
of the first book.
Yes, yeah.
But, and then she turns up in this book. I was like, oh, right, so she is. Oh, so we must be in. And I don't want to be going, oh, right, so here we are, like 20% of the way into a book. And this is quite a chunky book, a long book as well. Mm. Let me, if I type in Audible, I'll find it in my Audible library here.
Yeah, I think it is always such a difficult task if you, as the reader, have to blindly stick to it and follow along and trust the author that it's going to be a good payoff, like just reading things that you are utterly confused, you don't know where you are, when or what and who also to follow along and like find as your person that you stick to as the reader.
And so spoilers for the rest of this view, I did not finish this book.
Okay.
But I should have known I wasn't going to finish this book after it took me like 4 separate attempts to get into it and like fading out in chapter 2 by the time I got to chapter 2 not being into it.
Yeah.
But I finally was like, no, I'm going to give this book a proper, you know, like a proper go.
Yeah.
And over Christmas and New Year's or whatever, I was like, right, now is the time. I've finished up my other books, don't have podcasts to listen to because I've literally finished every podcast
on that one.
So I was like, yeah, let's just focus on this. I should get into it and start listening to it. And I did. And it was a slog because the main character is just a gang boss with nothing else going on in her life except that she fancies 2 of her co-workers.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, no, it's just like the gangsters who were like the bad guys / background characters or, you know, like the
I don't even remember.
Again,
it's from the first book.
So there's a city and then there's some walls and then there's like Ashtown outside the city walls. Mm. And you had the runners who were the drivers who drove around in Mad Max cars and like drove over people, which were mentioned, I think, just for to like make it more visual in the first book. Mm. But I never really thought these were important people, except that there were some, you know, these were some of the, you know, the henchmen.
Mm.
And it's sort of like, oh, now we're the henchmen. We're in a gangster situation with a henchman.
And I was like, spending time with these people now.
I was like, oh, no, I don't like spending time with gangsters.
Mm.
So much so that even like when we watched, and I've mentioned this before, that we watched The Godfather. and you're like, oh,
part of it, and I didn't even finish.
No, you didn't finish The Godfather because the people that you're spending time with are just the worst people. Mm. Every single person in The Godfather is stupid, a thug, and solves every problem with violence. And everything that I had in my head before watching The Godfather made me think it was a better movie talking about more interesting people. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, the movie making is incredible. Like, it's good. It's a very well-made movie about people who I don't like anything about them, don't think they're heroic, and don't find anything about them interesting.
Yeah.
And to the point where, you know, I mentioned it before. I know I've mentioned it before on the podcast when they were like, you know, you hear, oh, the horse's head in someone's bed. Oh, what does it mean? And it means, oh, they just killed someone's horse to make him think that they're going to kill him to get what they want. Yeah. And I was like, oh, we're going to, you know, do this. Oh, shoot, you know, leave the gun, take the cannoli or whatever. I was like, oh, that's just, they just murder people. Oh, we're doing this. Oh, it's just murder. Oh, and how do they solve the problem? Oh, they just murder everyone that they don't like and disagrees with them. And then and I was like, oh, so it's just thugs being violent, and every single problem is solved by, well, we just kill the people who disagree with us. Mm. The end. And I'm like, that's no good. And also, here's the critical thing, is that the story is from someone who is the favorite son of the Godfather, of the most powerful person on Staten Island or New York or wherever it is like this. So, and his character arc is going from the favorite son, the favorite privileged son of the most powerful person. And by the end of the movie, he is now the most powerful person. He becomes the Godfather. I was like, Oh, right. So the big character arc is you go from position number two And you end in position number one. I was like, wow, Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, like, and it feels like it's one of those things that I always thought there was some character development in the sense of there's some reflection on what they're doing, or nothing. There's some sort of like any development into, like,
it's just a guy who
and then he just steps up and does the
literally
same.
At the first opportunity in the book, they were like, oh, we need to solve this problem. He's like, I'll do it, I'll kill him. And I was like, I've watched so many video essays about how this is an amazing moment and the sound design works and the cinematography is all great. It's like, yeah, it's all good, but in the end it's just someone going, will I kill a guy or not? Yes, I will. And I'm like, great. So anyway, let's put all of the Godfather aside. But all of the same problems come up here, is that we're with someone who is already literally the sister of the two most powerful people in Ashtown, outside the city walls, those beyond the world. So from all the people who are behind the world, she is literally already the third most powerful or third most safe person. Again, and the only reason why everything isn't really, really easy for her is that it's secret that she's actually the sister of the two people who are running things.
Oh.
Or the one guy who's running things.
Right.
You know, the emperor. She's the sister of the emperor. Mm-hmm. And there's rumors like, oh, maybe they're a couple, because people don't know. It's sort of like, why is she, you know, in his confidence, why is she being, you know, groomed to take over as a, you know, this leadership role? And also Adam, who is the guy who in the previous book was the one who worked out how to move people between worlds. So the person who works out how to move people between worlds, and literally the person called the Emperor, we're following the sister of these two people.
Hmm.
And I'm guessing by the end of the book, she takes over and she's now like the mob boss. She becomes the Emperor, or whatever the title is that she would take. Okay. I'm guessing that's what's happening. But that story is not interesting to me. Like, the super privileged person, and it's revealed, like the twist of the book, or one of the reveals of the book, is that she actually grew up inside the city wall for, you know, like, that's her thing. She actually has citizenship. So she's got dual citizenship. So she can just move around inside the city and also outside the city. And I was like, wow, this is becoming less and less interesting.
Yeah.
Because what was fun about Kara in the first book is that she didn't know how to move in the other worlds. And it was all about like, oh, I'm not quite sure. Like, you know, am I saying the right thing? I don't know my history with these people, you know, because she's replaced someone, like, and she's trying to pass herself off. And in this book, it's sort of like, oh, no, someone who is, you know, Mr. Scales, and all of the bosses, mob bosses, are called Mr., even though it's a she, you know. So it's Mr. Scales, does whatever she wants, you know. And I'm just like, this is like, you've picked out the least interesting person in 100 universes. There's like two cities spread out over 100 universes. So in 200 cities, you've picked out one of the least interesting people to follow along.
Right. Yeah.
It's the overprivileged.
Sounds like very privileged person.
Yeah. Well, but the thing is, but she is constantly like railing against the authorities. And I'm like, you are the authorities. Like, and she just beats people up and she's like vindictive and masochistic and violent. And I'm like, oh, it's just not fun to spend time with Mr. Scales at all. And
I guess that's the point.
Well, let's get onto that. So anyway, in the end, every problem that comes up, violence is the answer. And what else have I done? So yeah. And oh yeah, also it's just boring. So we're spending time with a violent, angry, terrible person doing boring stuff. However, there is a bit of a love triangle, or she fancies two different guys mm-hmm. and wants to get with them. But I guess she's not like classically beautiful or classically good looking. But I was like, just find someone to fuck who isn't these guys. I don't know. Well, it's one of those things that I'm like, just work with it.
Okay.
Anyway, there are many, many other issues with this book. But I didn't finish it because of this main issue. Is that if you... Okay. Let's go.
So you read about 20% into it.
No. I got like 6 or 7 hours. So about maybe let's say a third of the way in.
Okay.
Let's say 40% of the way in.
Right.
Probably got about 40% of the way in because I just looked here. The length of the book is 15 hours and 17 minutes.
That's quite substantial.
Okay, so here's the other big thing. One of the big issues is that what am I waiting to be revealed? We have this unreliable narrator like we did in the first book. Mm-hmm. And the unreliable narrator reveals that she's like part of the way into the book, like 10% of the way into the book reveals like there's the revelation that she's not who she says she is. She's actually someone else from a different universe who's taken over somebody's, you know, somebody else's identity. Her from another universe's identity is mm-hmm. who she's taken over.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fun. And it sets things up. It's sort of like, ah, right. Did you work this out so far? Like, what is the history between her? Oh, she was like, oh, they actually did fuck at one point, but she didn't know that because she's never fucked this person. Her alternative, her, you know, it's just fun. And in this book, there's nothing like that. So like, there's like, what is the core storytelling device of like how to make it interesting? And this is always good fun in books where like somebody is dressed up as another person. Somebody is trying to pass themselves off as this other person. Like this goes all the way back to, you know, fucking the Odyssey with Odysseus turning up and nobody recognizes him, but his dog recognizes him. The dog recognizes him, but nobody else does, you know.
Okay, so I just got confused for a second here. When you were talking about the person that was revealed to be her from a different place.
Yeah, that's in the first book. That's Kara in the first book.
It sounded like it was in this book as well.
No, what I'm saying is the fun stuff that was in the first book, all of that's missing.
So much to play with there.
What is the science fictional stuff? Like, how do you get between worlds? How do you do it? Mm. What's it like to go here? What's this place? None of that. I got 40% in the way and it was like this minor background stuff. Like, oh yeah, some people are coming over from another place and killing people in this place. So we better watch out for that. And I'm like, oh, right, that's it. And so what was like the foundational science fictional idea of the first book just becomes sort of like a minor part of some like random mission that she goes on in this book.
Okay.
So I was like, so where's the science fiction?
Yeah.
Anyway, this book is not for me. And it felt like a Hunger Games inspired young adult novel because the main character is so stupid, there's just nothing there going on at all.
How old is she supposed to be then?
I don't care.
Okay.
Like 27. Let's just say 27 is the random age because some people, you know, by that time you're not settled down and you've still got character growth to go, but you're old enough that you've had enough experience to do this. Whatever. So I'm just going to guess 27 because that's like the random age that, you know, protagonists should be if they're not young adult protagonists. Yeah. But you still want to pass them off as someone who's built up enough skills and has history with people, but isn't old enough to be like a fully formed adult with, you know, settled down into their responsibilities yet.
Yes.
That is what you are when you're 27, I guess.
Yeah.
So science fiction mystery was lacking. The actual plot was lacking. So anyway, so then I listened to this Wizards versus Lesbians podcast.
Yeah.
They agreed with me.
Finally.
Yeah, finally. You know, like it's been sitting in my podcast player. Again, they had quite a few of the same complaints that I had, but they somehow enjoyed the book otherwise.
And finished the
book. Might be because, you know, they're more in with the fan world and they're friends with the author and they've got to say. Again, I'm not knocking anyone like that. I always feel
Can
a bit
reasons.
Disappointed when I discover someone on a podcast or a reviewer is friends with actual science fiction authors because I'm like, oh, I can never really... Can I trust what you're saying now about these books? I don't know. Either way, not a criticism. It's just like something I always have to look out for in this one.
Yeah.
So anyway, but what they mentioned on there is that not included in the audiobook is a foreword by the author saying that this book was written in 2001 as a response to, or in the mind space of someone who is watching and participating in the Black Lives Matter protests and movements and is really, really angry. So this
That's 2001.
Sorry, 2021. Sorry.
Oh, thank you. Because utterly confusing what you said just now.
Written in 2021.
Okay.
As from a place of anger. And I was like, yeah, this is like a really angry book. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I don't think writing a book from the place of anger is the right place to write the book. Mm. To write a book. Mm. Or put it this way, once you've written a book from a place of anger, then even if you're still angry, go back and edit it so it's actually a good book.
Yes.
I don't mind. If this book was just a very angry book, I'd be fine with it.
Yeah.
You know, I've read other kind of like cyberpunk dystopian books which were written from a place of anger, I'm sure, and have found them interesting. Like, mm-hmm. I don't mind books about angry people or angry situations. Mm. But this book, and I was like, it makes so much sense that this book is something that just glorifies all of the things which I see as a problem in the world, but it's this like it's this American way of looking at things where, but if you at the end of your book, the message is corporations are bad, it doesn't matter anything else that happens in the book. You're passed off as the correct side of something because corporations and rich people being bad, and you know. And police, again, like the, you know, the all cops are bad, like the police being a representation and enforcement mechanism for capitalism or whatever it's going to be.
Yeah.
Is, again, I sympathize with that, but it can never be that just because your main character goes up against corporations doesn't give everything that they do a pass.
Mm. But also, she is part of it, the way I understood, the main character.
It's so confused. The book is so angry and so confused. I didn't get deep enough into the book to discover any subtlety that goes on. But looking from other people's reviews, of other people who didn't finish it or who get rated it low, these issues remain throughout the book.
Okay.
And the other issue is in the same kind of thing. It's sort of like it doesn't matter how bad the main character, literally evil the main character is in terms of causing violence and suffering to other people and not worrying about the silence, violence and suffering to other people. But as long as when it comes to gender issues, they use the correct pronouns for the people, you know, who are trans or non-binary or whatever, as long as you get people's pronouns right, it doesn't matter if you literally murder people by driving over them in your car. The murdering people and driving over them in your car is less of a black mark against your character than if you accidentally got someone's gender pronouns mixed up. And I'm like, I don't know what the signaling is here. Like, I would prefer that the people who care about people's gender pronouns also reflect good character in terms of not being okay with violently murdering people by driving over them.
Yeah.
Which we've been told happens with these people. You know, these people kill people all the time. They are violent, thuggish, ignorant, sadistic murderers. But they get people's gender pronouns correct. So, yay. And I'm like, where did this diversion in the book comes from? Like,
yeah.
I don't understand the balance here. Like, it's so, like, focused in its view. And I get it that it's an angry book. And I get it that it's by a black author writing in, you know, watching, you know, and taking part in Black Lives Matter stuff. But I'm, like, saying it does everything, every view that it has, which I might agree with or might feel sympathetic to, it does a disservice to by spending, like, putting those views into someone who is a stupid, miserable, loser, violent person who's probably going to become the most powerful person outside the city walls by the end of the book.
Yeah.
And so, what is it? Social issues good, but also violence is good and murder is good and extortion is good and you know, what do you call it? Protection rackets is good. Like, which way around does it go?
Yes.
And it's a real pity that this book was so bad that it took me many attempts to get into it. And then I regret ever spending an Audible credit on it, and I gave up 40% of the way through.
Yeah, happens.
It does happen, and I wish it didn't happen.
Other people obviously also, like, what's the Goodreads kind of...
Well, here's the thing. It's from people who read the first book, enjoyed the first book. 4.11, you know, general rating. Mm. But man, this book is a big drop-off from the first one. Like, massive. Like, it's literally one of the most disappointing second books or follow-up books to any book. And it's just, again, for all these issues that I've given you here.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that might have been something to do with that the first book had so many fun themes to play around with.
Here's the thing, that there were issues really with the first book, but the strengths of the first book, it was, the strengths of the first book were enough to overwhelm any, like, what are the politics here? Or like, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. Or like, hey, are we really doing, but it's fine. Like, again, I'll give any... like, lack of good writing a pass if the ideas and the concepts and the story and the characters are good enough to take me through. Any book can still get 4 stars or 4.5 stars, even with flaws, even major flaws, if there's enough to tide me over and keep me going. Mm. But if this book is just the flaws plus other flaws plus being, like, politically questionable.
Yeah, and then missing out on all the fun stuff.
Yeah, and also missing out on the fun stuff.
Yeah.
So, friends and followers, it's got 12 reviews here, or 12 ratings, but 3 reviews. One is by Greg. He gives it 4 stars. Great storytelling, but not up to par with the previous book. And then Adam says, DNF, I don't remember what I liked about the first book, but this wasn't it. Yeah. I do remember what I liked about the first book, and this wasn't it. I was looking at, like, oh, maybe this is only like 1.5 stars, 1 star, 2 stars, whatever. So I looked on Goodreads to find some other people who were giving it 2 stars. And one person said, I agree with everything that Daniela wrote. And I was like, who's Daniela? So I went to find Daniela's review, and I found it, and it's the highest rated 1-star review. And it's sort of like, however, this book, I hated it. I've already cancelled my pre-order. So it's someone who obviously gets, like, you know, NetGalley advanced reader copies. Yeah. And then if they like the book, they'll buy the book, you know, to support the author and have a copy themselves.
Makes sense.
I could consider DNFing, but I had to know how it ended in order to fully compare it to the first book. And so I can confidently say this book did not do the first book justice and in some way ruined my impression of the first book retroactively. It doesn't for me, because I'm totally fine with, like, separating out novels. Like, second books don't ruin first books to me.
Yeah.
And this
also seems to be a bit further away from the first book. There's
not
that much
the same
overlap.
Characters. Yeah. And I didn't get to the... And someone says, oh, they really did Kara dirty. And I'm like, well, I'm glad I got to the part... I'm glad I didn't get to the part where they reveal something about Kara or kill her off, or, you know, she turns out to be the bad guy or whatever it's going to be. Like, no, don't mess up. Like, even though you're the author and you can decide, like, how things in the first book aren't actually as they are and they were bad, actually, or whatever like that.
Looks like a very comprehensive review there.
Well, yeah, it's pretty good. 5 reasons it didn't work for me. The narrator, Mr. Scales, is extremely annoying. And then, like, a huge paragraph. The characterization interactions of the characters here that were in the space between worlds were completely different from what they were in that book. And there was no explanation or background as to why. Well, it's because you're with a different main character.
Yeah.
Number 3, a lot of the plot hinges on magical elements that were not explained and felt extremely out of place in a supposed science fiction book. Didn't get to them, obviously, in the second half. Mm-hmm. The messaging was extremely blatant, which was true in the space between worlds as well, but here it wasn't even written well. And I think that's the issue. So it brings up, everything was so simplistic and black and white to the point I found it borderline offensive. The sex trade was portrayed... The sex trade was portrayed as a healing, as healing, like a feminist healing group. A female Wileyite getting mad at being called Mister was compared to transphobia. The aforementioned run of violence was portrayed as a good thing. And Scales repeats over and over that it's okay for stories to be lies in order to support a cause. So, yeah, and I read and I saw some other people. Oh, they also mentioned that on the Wizards versus Lesbians. Apparently, one of the main dramatic finales of the book is by doing, like, a false flag operation and pretending something bad is happening to get the people to rise up. And you're like, oh, okay, that's weird. Anyway, and then 5, there were a few scenes that didn't make sense and seemed to contradict what was described earlier in the book. Yeah, and I think that's it as well. Like, it's just not very well plotted, not put together. And I wish there was a second pass here.
And I think this is kind of like what sums it up in referring, like, to the angry book theme.
Yeah.
This is why, literally, everybody's always being told, if you're angry, write the email, Don't send it.
Yeah.
And then read it again the next day.
Yeah.
Because you will have a different view on what you wrote. You have stepped back from this anger. And that is, I think, what's kind of clouding everything. If you're writing down something, like you're really angry, it's full of emotions and your view on things is so clouded. You can't objectively look at things.
Yeah.
And then look at it in a more like, okay, maybe if I just step slightly to the left, that whole topic changes and stuff.
Yeah.
So, and I think this is exactly what happens here.
Also,
you need to step back from it.
Also, when you write that long angry email and don't send it the next day, generally you get it down from a 12 paragraph angry rant and you get it down to one paragraph that was sort of like, oh, I'm unhappy with this situation and I'd like to change this one thing. Would that be okay?
Yes.
And the email comes back.
Because you can be a bit more reflective.
And the email comes back like, yeah, no problem. Yes. That and I'm like, oh, so all of this stuff that was anger, and you're like, oh, it could have been like three sentences, right? And that's what this book is. Like I say, this is an audiobook which is 15 hours long. That is too long to sustain this much angry writing. Like, an angry writing needs to be, even if the character starts angry, goes through the book angry, and finishes angry, if there isn't a mellow out the anger or become angry kind of thing, if there's not going to be any like character arc where
there's, or development like, in any sort.
I'm just even saying how much anger the main character has, or if it's sort of like one character who's really angry and like two other viewpoint characters who aren't really angry, it could be 15 hours. But this starts angry, and 40% of the way through a 15-hour audiobook, just as angry. No more or less angry. And I was like, I don't want her to once again talk about how, whatever it's going to be, you know, like how it's really, and again, it's this, and I think this is something that comes up with this Daniela stuff. It's sort of like, oh, like the passive violence of living in a corporate society with inequalities is bad, but actual explicit violence over in Ashtown is really good. And I was like, how is this being balanced? Like, people like being fooled into being comfortable is worse than people explicitly being murdered in the streets. But at least that's honest violence. And I'm like, what? How? Which? Like, I don't understand. Like, I don't understand the viewpoint of the main character. And I'm not even saying this is Micaiah Johnson's views. I don't mind if it is or isn't. But, like, there has to be some kind of rigor or some kind of, there has just the whole thing has to be, I know, better expressed. And you can't just fall back on being like, I was angry when I wrote this.
Good violence and bad violence? Is that a thing?
No, it's... No, because...
I'm just trying to...
No, because the violence... You know, when people say, oh, something is violence. And it's like, once you say something is violence, which isn't violence, you know, like microaggressions are violence against me. It's like, no, it's not. It's like people being... Microaggressions are like, you know, people being annoying.
Manipulation.
Yeah, and... but I mean, it can be, you know, intentional microaggression, whatever it is. But if you say that's violence and you say and violence is bad or violence is good, then actual violence doesn't have a word for it anymore.
Yeah.
Like physical causing physical harm and death violence. On purpose is equated with microaggressions. Like the microaggressions are like the, oh, you live... You're very well cared for and you don't need to worry about being killed in the streets, but you live 20 floors down on this skyscraper and the rich people live up above and you need to go down the floors because you're not meant to be here, or your skin color is sort of like, that is terrible. That's like the worst thing ever. Meanwhile, I'm literally beating and raping people over here. And that's good.
Is that an excuse?
Because that's keeping people in their place, and people in Ashtown need to be kept in their place. I don't know. Like, again, I'm confused about the political messaging of this main character. It's just bad. Like, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't. It's alien to me.
You know what this feels like? This feels like corporations and like the people living so far away from this who have people to do this, to keep people in place, they are succeeding. This feels like...
I don't know. You're trying to make excuses for a book which in the end isn't a good enough book for me to get to the end to work out what actually the political messaging is here. And it's just one of those things where you just go like, well, I would love it to be, I would love to have like a book which was written by a black author in, you know, in 2021, who was angry at Black Lives Matter. I would love that to be, I wouldn't say rigorous, just good. Like, yeah. I just want it to be like, let me latch onto something here.
Which I want to be on your
just,
side.
Which isn't just privileged gangster violence against people.
Yeah. That's weird.
No, it's not even a side. Like, I don't think there's a side in Black Lives Matter.
Yes, I mean, yes.
Do you understand? I don't even want to say, this is good or not bad, or I agree with this or not agree with this. Like,
the way that was just a turn of phrase, which is actually not really what it should be.
No, no.
Yeah.
There
shouldn't be any questions.
Shouldn't be any questions. There shouldn't be any sides.
Yeah.
And I don't even want to say that, I think violence is the way to achieve your political goals. I think there's some really good science fiction that could be written about using violence to achieve political goals. And I'd be really interested to read that, especially from a black black author writing, being angry about Black Lives Matter. Like, what would it be like to, but that can't be the same book, or it doesn't, for me it's not a satisfying book for that same main character to be a gang, like a privileged gang leader who is sister of the emperor, who by the end of the book probably wants to become the godfather or the emperor or whatever it's going to be. Like, you're working on hard mode to do political messaging about Black Lives Matter and have your main character be a gangster. It's like, this is now really, it's, again, I'm not saying that there isn't a good book that could be done there, but this is not it for me.
But I find it really fun that the one star review, which is very extensive, has the most likes. It's no, right there.
No, no, it's because I clicked on one star reviews.
Oh, you sorted them. I see.
So yeah, this has got 31 likes.
But it's literally people referring.
Look,
in
if
there.
If I click on in the five stars here, I'm sure the top review here and here will have more than 80 likes, you know, so it's
it's also a bit more extensive.
Yeah,
it's
look,
not just
I'm not saying I went to find that review. That one, the one star review isn't the first one that ever, like, Goodreads doesn't show you one star reviews on a book rated
sense.
This. Like, the algorithm doesn't
look
work
for
that way.
Okay, that makes sense.
0.5 stars. Didn't finish the book, so it only gets 0.5 stars, which is, again, a big drop. Probably one of the biggest drop-offs of book one to book two of anything I want to say here.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think Hyperion. What did I give Hyperion in the second book for that Fall of Hyperion? I didn't finish that and gave that 1.5 stars. So it has happened before.
Yeah.
But yeah.
All right. What's next then?
Next up, we've got Earth Abides.
Oh yeah.
And also we've got our Christmas special that we've got to record, which was talking about Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
But I didn't want to do Lord of the Rings now because the last episode
we need to specify this is the movie.
Well, yeah, I'm saying, but we just did a movie podcast. Yeah. We're reviewing reviewing a book, but like talking about a movie. And I didn't want to do two movie podcasts back to back. So
makes sense.
So we'll do Earth Abides in some order, Earth Abides and the Lord of the Rings movie trilogy podcast discussion.
Yes.
All right.
Looking forward to that.
Become my friends on Goodreads so I can see when you review a book. I can check, give you a name check and see what, or either on the podcast. Oh, I'll be able to see your reviews anyway. You go over to SFBRP listener group on Goodreads as well and throw out some recommendations there. Someone recommended a different podcast called A Meal of Thorns.
Yeah.
And I've listened to now three episodes of that, and I've got another one. Because, again, it's discussions about specific books for the whole episode, one book. So, again, I only want to listen to episodes with books that I've read the full book.
That makes sense, yes.
And I realized, they did Pattern Recognition, and I read Pattern Recognition by William Gibson. So I am currently partway through an episode of two people talking about pattern recognition, and it's a good podcast. So
good.
Thanks
for the recommendation.
So there's two recommendations, Wizards versus Lesbians and A Meal of Thorns, very different podcasts, but, you know, approaching science fiction reviewing in two different ways.
Nice.
So thanks for the recommendation, whoever recommended that. I need a drink.
Yes, I can hear that.
I've been struggling for the last few minutes.
Okay.
Not to cough.
Well, let's just
wrap it up there. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.